Thanks, Dave. His download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. A little truncated download here after the Northwestern Wildcats lose to Oklahoma down in Norman. Oklahoma, top 20 ranked team, of course. Lon Kruger, some old familiar faces, if you will, to the Illinois area. Of course, used to coach at Illinois. But the Oklahoma Sooners just blew out the Wildcats there. That was not even a contest. A nice little 20, was it 30 point? Jeez. 89, somewhere in there. Just less than 30 points. But not a good showing. And that's going to be a problem for the Wildcats. They have to start getting some quality wins because what this would be their fifth loss. And you start to get into that territory early in the season where you can't have big losses, a big loss total, if you don't have quality wins. So when you get the chance against the Sooners, who are ranked, you want to win that game on the road because that helps when you're on the bubble later in March. Joe Romano knows what I'm talking about. Mr. Sports.
Yeah.
Right? But that's the problem with the Wildcats, is that they are going to be judged come March if they don't win the tournament and win the Big Ten by their win-loss record against quality teams. So when they get blown out by the Oklahoma Sooners tonight, that's not a good look when you come later in a couple of months.
Absolutely. And, you know, they weren't at full strength. One of their best players was out. But that's especially if they're not going to win the conference and they need to, they're going to be a team at large. They're going to need some of these bubble victories, some of these, yeah. You go into Norman, that's an eye-opener to win a game like that.
You got at least, it's how I felt about the, I mean, it's different, of course, but I felt like about the Bulls last night going into Cleveland and having the ball in their hands with a chance to tie at the end, losing the game, of course, which doesn't really matter because, like I said, the season doesn't start till Christmas. We're still a couple days before Christmas. But that has to show the rest of the NBA that the Bulls, of course, had a 7-game winning streak. They lost a game, but they lost it in a way where they held tight with LeBron James and company.
Yeah, the classic preseason game, It's once we get going on the 25th and the games actually count, we'll be all right.
That's right. All right, we got a great show lined up tonight. Like I said, a truncated version of the download here on 720 WGN for all of your travel needs. Of course, today was a big travel day in Chicago. They had the tracker. You could track all the, I think it was ABC News was doing the flight tracker. You could see what the air traffic controllers see. Always one of my favorite graphics. And on my list for overreported. Tonight, coming up here right after the news, we're going to have Ray Long and Eitan McKaylee in studio reloading this week's news. What's the biggest stories? The overreported, the underreported, the winners, the losers. What story took you down the rabbit hole? And which story from this week will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 55, 100 years from this week? I have a feeling it has something to do with taxes. That would be my guess. But we'll see. A lot of other stuff going on, including a lot of lawsuits popping up. We'll talk about that over Apple and their alleged slowdowns of old iPhones. Talk about that coming up as well. Also tonight, this is a holiday tradition for the download, and this is something I'm very excited about. I get a ton of texts every Friday night from listeners who go, "Hey, are you going to do the frying pan tonight? Is Steve Gadlin back in the building?" And I'd be like, "Nah, not tonight, man. He's busy." And frying pan, of course, a longtime Friday night staple here on the download. An inventor, an innovator, a guy who won on Shark Tank, who comes here first to workshop new ideas for Mark Cuban. And he gives us a chance to give a yay or nay. It's mostly nay. And the fun part is, trying to poke holes in his ideas before, give him the confidence that he needs to take it to Cuban. But tonight, your Christmas prayers have been answered. A holiday tradition, Steve Gadlin and the frying pan back tonight coming up at 10 o'clock. How great is that?
Oh, it is a Christmas miracle.
There it is. Rob knows what I'm talking about.
It
Hi,
is
Rob.
A Christmas miracle.
Right?
Well,
it takes a while.
I'm a big Gadlin fan.
I think he came back for one around Thanksgiving, maybe a little bit before, and then he's been off since. I mean, it's hard to come up with these inventions, and he takes them seriously. And there was a time he was so prolific where it was like, I think it was last year, he did one every week. It was just like boom, 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 boom. And we both determined that might have been part of the problem, that he's having to, on a short week's rest, if you will, he's having to come right back and pitch a new idea, and some of them might have not been as formed as others.
Well, the way his mind works, he needs a sabbatical.
Right.
He's got to refresh, regroup, recharge.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it, recharge.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives them more time to get the R&D down, to think about the marketing. So Steve Gadlin.
I think I've been on board with more of his things, which really amounts to about two, than most anybody else.
I will say this, the amazing thing about Steve's work, and he does it every single time he comes in, is people will have, ultimately someone's got something to say, right? Oh, this is terrible. Nay, this guy's the worst, this, that, and the other. But then I'll be watching something on TV and they'll be like, hey, it's an umbrella. It's an Uber umbrella. You can get an umbrella anywhere you're at by just calling this number. And I'm like, that's Steve's idea. That's what I see over and over and over. So I feel like he is right there with all the other inventors, and he has the courage to come in and give his ideas to the world. And you see some of those ideas come to fruition somewhere else, but it's just proof that they were good ideas.
Yeah.
So he's coming up. So like you said, Christmas miracle. Steve Gadlin in the studio. Speaking of Christmas, you just missed it. It was amazing. While Dave Ennett and Joey Meyer were wrapping up the Northwestern game, you know, Michigan Avenue is a buzz right now. There's a lot of late night shoppers, people going back and forth. It's got a very Christmas vibe going on here. And while Dave was wrapping up from Norman, a group of kids got in front of the window here. There was probably about 15, 20 kids, and they did Christmas carols.
Oh, very nice.
Right? And I couldn't hear them because the broadcast is in Norman, so I'm like, why are these people all in a semicircle staring at me? Yeah. Right? They were just like right in front. So I put the board in queue, and I was able to listen to it. And I felt bad. I was like, if they were like 5 minutes later, I would have given them airtime, but I couldn't. I wasn't going to be like, excuse me, Dave, I know you're in the post game. I know you're breaking down the game, but I just want to play you a little bit. Here, listen, I pulled it off my phone. Hear that?
It's nice.
Right? That was just impromptu.
And I like kind of Ennett underneath that, too.
Yeah.
You can kind of hear him from the exterior speaker. Yeah, you got him.
Right.
But there they are.
I put it in queue because I was like, well, hey, man, maybe I can get some of this. And so they got a little bit of airtime. But while that was happening, so that's happening. There's all these people on Michigan Avenue. Everyone's all around, and it's joyous, and we're getting ready to broadcast. There's a buzz in the air here. Right next to the semicircle, I hear it, like the whole studio kind of booms, it like shakes, it reverberates a little bit, like, and usually that happens when someone hits the window really hard. And that, you know, that's just sort of once in a while that'll happen. And I look behind me, and there was a little toddler who was maybe 2, 3, 4 years old, somewhere in that area, who was crying in his dad's arms because he had gone full force into the window, like a bird.
Oh boy.
Into the Apple store. You know what I mean? Like, and I get the idea. You know, you want to get into the broadcast. They probably said, "Look, they're doing radio," and he just took off and he ran right into the window. I'm sure he's okay.
We're not liable for that, by the way.
No, we're not. And I was telling Joe, I think it was funny because, you know, I could understand that happening over in the new building across the Pioneer Court here because it's pristine, it's brilliant, it's the architecturally wonderful, the Apple Store. You get the glass walls look like they're part of the river. But the GN Showcase Studio windows are nothing like that. They're dirty, they're mangy, they're... They got a nice little cloud of filth on them. Like, they're just streaks and scratches and scrapes. Like, it's not new technology. It's not like we changed the windows. You know, I just thought that was funny that I don't know what was happening there with,
well,
with the toddler.
There are two thick panes, and there are some, you know, some support stanchions in there.
There's nothing that really screams you can run through it.
He was probably focused, the little guy.
Yeah, he was.
He was ready to roll.
It was tears of embarrassment more than pain. I could tell. He was just a little shocked from the embarrassment.
Well, who among us haven't been there?
Maybe tears of laughter. He thought it was funny too.
Maybe he thought it was funny too. Maybe it's going to take a little bit of time, but hopefully he's okay. So that was all happening while the carolers were giving us joy to the world. There you go. I'm all done. I'm done with my shopping. I'm ready to rock. I feel good. I feel like this is it's kind of a strange time, Rob. I think you would agree that it's a little bit ghost towny here at WGN Radio. I feel like we got the email. The email came out from station management, from Todd and company. It was like, hey, kick off early if you can. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I'm like, hey, if you can, it doesn't apply to us.
No.
We can't.
No, because, I mean, we're not here, and what happens is dead air. And that's not good.
I remember always, you know, looking for that email the day before a holiday, being like, oh, you know, when I was working a 9-to-5, like, oh, that's, oh, we can leave at 12. That's great. Yeah, that doesn't apply to us now. And when I look back now, I was talking to my wife, I was like, well, it's funny because I figured, I'm like, well, I'll work on Friday. It's not Christmas. It's the 22nd. It's not Christmas yet. I didn't realize how close we were just based when I looked at a calendar. And then it's different than saying working a half day up till noon, right? In our case, I mean, Rob, you're not out of here till after midnight.
No, midnight, man. That's
right?
It.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, and if I'm really lucky, something monumental will happen right at about 10 to 12.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
So then that warrants me staying even longer.
Got to wrap all that stuff for the morning.
Right.
Oh.
Right. Yeah.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah. That's
all right.
I mean.
Well,
Some sort of police action overseas, or maybe another missile launch by North Korea. You never know.
You never know.
You know,
there's a time difference. A lot of stuff happening.
It's a roll of the dice.
Asia. I will say this though: it is always a source of pride and humility and honor to be on the air on big days, traffic days. I always think about this. Pete and I have talked about it before. To work the right before the 4th of July when people are getting out of town, or Labor Day, or any of the times you know, where people might be looking for a 3-day weekend, and knowing that there are a lot of people traveling tonight and going to their families or going to a place to celebrate the holidays, or possibly just getting home from work and wanting to unwind before what's going to happen, just a weekend that they're spending with loved ones. I always find it awesome to be on the air and providing some sort of entertainment for them as they get to where they have to get. So
I don't know if there's one person that has, you know, come through these doors, sat in front of these microphones, that at some point in time, if not more than once, gets that feeling of, you know, this is it. I mean,
yeah.
We're on WGN, and we're very grateful and thankful for that opportunity.
And that's right. So coming up here, we will have, right after the news, we will have Ray Long and Eitan McKaylee in studio. We'll reload this week's news. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We'll do that. And then coming up at 10 o'clock, The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. I can't think of a better gift to give to the WGN listeners than Steve Gadlin and The Frying Pan. Holiday edition coming up tonight on The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. News, weather, and traffic, of course, with Rob Martier and Roger Badish tonight. Joe Romano's in for Pete Zimmerman. Like I said, I'm Justin. And this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Thanks, Rob. Welcome back to The Download here, 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time to reload this week's news. We do every Friday night. The winners, the losers, the biggest stories, the overreported, the underreported. Which story took you down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered from this week? 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 500 years from this week. Well, we got a panel trying to break that down. Ray Long's back in the building. Ray Long, of course, investigative reporter over at the Chicago Tribune. Good
hello
to see
there.
You,
hello.
And Eitan McKaylee's back in the building as well. He is a longtime journalist and also the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America from the Age of the Pullman Porters to the Age of Obama. Eitan, good to see you too.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I guess the biggest story, we all agreed. Usually, you know, there'll be two or three different things, but of course, the tax overhaul, the first time in 30 years or so that tax plan has changed this dramatically. A big win for Donald Trump and Republicans. They signed it today in a weird way. But what do we think of this? I mean, this was a story that, I mean, you had the numbers. You had both the House and the Senate, the presidency, not unlike repealing Obamacare. And in this case, they got it through.
Well, right. And they needed a win. And I think that was almost the thing that was pulling them through at the end, that they needed something to say, we did it. Now, the question is whether they're going to be sorry they did it later, because a lot of these provisions in here are going to be ones that will be controversial. Because take, for example, locally, a guy like Peter Roskam.
One of the co-writers of the bill? Right?
One of the co-writers of the bill. He's out there in DuPage County, where there's going to be a lot of people who are affected by the caps on mortgage and property taxes. And so there may be some backlash right there in that district. Now, some people say, well, you know, this is the big tax change in a generation since back when Reagan in his opening years, and they had lots of backlash. It was a recession, you guys remember back then. I was actually in Peoria covering Bob Michael, the House Minority Leader then, and he had the tightest race of his career then because it was basically a referendum on Reaganomics. And so now we have maybe a referendum on Trumponomics here this time.
Hey, Tom, what do you think of this story? I mean, this is one that has been struck with along party lines. Liberals being very, very angry about it. Conservatives saying that it's about time. This is great. If we're going to jumpstart this, why we brought Trump to D.C. What do you make of the tax overhaul?
It struck me just how amateurishly this bill was put together. You'd think if this was something that Republicans had been thinking about for decades and planning for decades, that they would have actually had plans that they could have taken off the shelf and used. And instead, it seemed like they cobbled things together. They did things that didn't make any sense. They tried to come up with, you know, a total based on all sorts of calculations that were kind of fictional and kind of fantastical even. Mm-hmm. So I'm just a little stunned at how incompetent this Republican majority in Congress is. It's almost as incompetent as the president. And
well, this Congress and Senate, for that matter, hasn't changed much since the days of deadlock and what happened at the end of the Obama administration. And that was when Congress was at its worst. The popularity of it was at its worst. It hasn't changed much since the days of John Boehner. But I mean, so going back to your point, Ray, it is a win is a win. And, right. You know, this is something that already you see a response from corporate America suggesting they're going to give bonuses and hire more. Sure. I mean, but there is at least, I mean, the goal of the tax overhaul was to jumpstart the economy. The Trump administration and others are pointing to, you can already see just from the ink that it's going to happen.
Yeah. And there are so many people who will be impacted by this bill. Even if you're at the bottom of the pay scale, you may get something. It may only be $50 or $60 you save, but if you're up in, say, the $85,000 bracket, you might be able to save $1,000 a year. You might see something more in your paycheck, which will make people happy going to the polls. But when they get the full ramifications of it, there are still so many questions. Some of these people could be the same ones who will be losing their health care insurance over the years, and that will be a major impact, and I think there'll be a backlash.
And, Eitan, the one thing that is not reconciled here, and what is a big issue, and right away it's philosophical and it's abstract, and no one pays attention to the idea that this is unbalanced, meaning that they're adding trillions of dollars to the deficit. There will be a push to cut spending to go along with it. And when that happens, there will be a short-term amnesia that the reason they're in this position is because the taxes were just cut.
They'll try, but, you know, they couldn't even get rid of Obamacare. And Obamacare is a relatively new entitlement, even if not everybody considers it an entitlement. The public has decided health care is a right. Let them try to take away Medicare. Let them try to take away some, you know, Social Security. These are programs that are baked into American society. I'm not saying that they'll fail necessarily, but the cost will be enormous. And the resistance that they're building up from the American people is substantial. I mean, we saw it in Alabama, of all places, where you see a solidly red state go blue for the first time in a generation.
And that was also special circumstances. I mean, really bad candidate.
Yeah, kind of, but I think that there's a lot of response to the way that the Republicans have been moving. You know, you talk about something like, you talked about ideology a second ago. When you're cutting taxes for the very richest people at the expense of the deficit or at the expense of entitlement programs, people are going to remember that, and that's not going to do anything for the economy. I mean, those folks are just going to reinvest that money along with whatever other investments they have. Well, that's not going anywhere.
But here's the thing that gets me, and as somebody who's just kind of watching this unfold, if I mean, and I go back to the election, the 2016 election, and it really did feel that the media and everybody else, and rightfully so, looked at why people were voting for Donald Trump. And there was a mid-moderate conservative Republican who didn't necessarily want to deal with Donald Trump's histrionics, the way that he speaks, the way that his social issues, but wanted a CEO-like businessman to run the economy because they felt that we could do better. That's what this is, right? This is the idea that they are getting a new tax overhaul, and if it works, a 4-5% increase in the economy. And that, and I know that there's a lot of questions to whether or not that theoretically can happen, but that's what Donald Trump and the Republicans are trying to accomplish.
I kind of think it was just racism with Donald Trump. I don't think it had anything to do with the economy. I think people voted against the black president.
There's that too. Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that it really mattered much what, you know, Donald Trump as a CEO is a disaster. He's never run anything successfully. He's never really been a CEO. He's got all these kind of brand businesses, you know, where he sells his name to be licensed on water, on beef, on all sorts of other things.
Buildings,
you know, that never pan out. So I don't, you know, you could have found a CEO businessman type. That's not Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's a tweet storm that is something that the nation was not ready for in many ways, obviously. But he's a guy who has messed with the Congress so much that they had conditioned themselves under Obama to just say no all the time. Now they forgot how to say yes and pull together a deal.
Obama wanted to cut the corporate tax rate to exactly the rate that they've got it now. That's something that he was willing to do. Obama, for all of the Republican belief that he's some sort of hippie, liberal, communist, anarchist, whatever else they think, really a black person, you know, what they're really blind to was that he was a pretty conservative guy, and he was willing to do a pretty conservative tax deal. It would have been a lot better balanced. It would have been a lot more thoughtful, in my opinion, and they would have gotten the same kind of corporate benefits. Why didn't they go for that deal? Some would say that their own predilection stopped it. I tend to think that they would go along with whatever got them reelected, and they looked at their electorate and saw that working with the African American president was just a no-go.
And I guess along those lines, I mean, now they're going to find out. If it was risky before, it's risky now. But I guess they have cover from the White House and President Trump, and because he has taken full responsibility. Even so, today on Twitter, essentially saying the mainstream media won't give me enough credit for how great of a president I am, which is a strange, maybe the first time a president's ever said that.
Well,
maybe. I don't know. I don't have the records in front of me. You guys are the journalists, right?
It depends on how you count it, right? He does things that are playing to different interests, like, you know, trying to cut back the EPA or trying to roll back regulations in various places that have been put there and may not even be strong enough in some people's minds in the first place, but he's been willing to roll them back. So there are just so many things that he thinks are good and he should be getting praised with that a lot of people are not seeing it the same way.
Welcome to politics. Ray Long, Eitan McGailey in studio. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. If you want to get into the conversation, text or call and give us your idea for what the biggest stories were. We're going to come back and do winners and losers here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a download. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200 in studio tonight. Eitan McGailey and Ray Long. As we wrap up this week's news, all right, let's get to the winners. I love it when we get to the winners. And both of Ray, you and I had the same. Trump and Republicans get the win.
Yeah, they get the win. They also get the loss because of the potential downside. So yeah, I mean, they finally pulled out a win, and I think that was part of what was driving them. You know, when you cover lawmakers and get that big deal cooking out there, they just finally have to get it done. And they were seeing that the deadline, and they were seeing also the big possibility of stories coming out that said, we didn't get anything done this year. So they they did finally pull it together for this after many failures on other things, like, you know, we're going to repeal Obamacare, we're going to repeal Obamacare, and then when they get a chance to repeal Obamacare, what do? They can't repeal it.
It is, I mean, it is interesting in the way that they are in control of all the chambers. I mean, they have cut out the Democratic Party from even having any say in this conversation. And I also find it to be somewhat interesting that even try to change the narrative on that to say Democrats won't play ball. And I'm like, well, you went to reconciliation to make sure that they don't play ball. I mean, there's a lot of that happening. Yeah. There is no bipartisanship happening whatsoever. But it does, it is a good thing, and you can argue the merits of the bill, but it is a good thing that a bill got passed in Congress.
You could argue the merits of that.
I don't think so. I mean, I will say, though, that this is a big win for Mitch McConnell in particular, because he had really looked like he wasn't able to get anything done in the Senate. And this didn't just make him seem successful. It also put him on a media tour where now he's I saw him quoted about Kentucky bourbon and a kind of touchy-feely interview on NPR where he said he's going to work with Democrats next year. He really comes across as a kind of centrist figure when he really has to be counted as one of the most partisan figures in the last 25, 30 years in American politics, for sure, easily.
Yeah, and just to elaborate on that, it's still stunning to many people that he refused to allow a vote on a Supreme Court nomination by Barack Obama. And that set up the stage so that Trump could put in Gorsuch later as his Supreme Court choice. But the idea that you can't get a sitting president a vote for partisan reasons is still amazing.
Well, I mean, obviously, this is a great way for Republicans to end the year. And they will point to this was something that, you know, this is something that this was the big ticket item they wanted to do. Or they could make an argument, and they kind of dance around the idea that Obamacare was, well, you know, there's a lot, that was a little sideshow, but this is really what we wanted to
basically,
do right here.
We've revealed it basically. Forget about the details.
But I mean, with that, and I have a little bit later, we'll talk more about the individual mandate repeal, because that has some significant ramifications here in Illinois and Cook County. But, you know, it is interesting to say that one bill and one week, and it's a complete turnaround for the Republicans. I mean, they're walking out of here acting like they had even like I said today, President Trump saying I had the best year of any president ever, and Merry Christmas
until the next indictment. You know, until Mike Flynn, you know, names Jared Kushner or Ivanka or somebody like that, and then you know we'll be back to Trump on the down.
He'll be down.
This is a roller coaster, and it's like the Screaming Eagle, not like anything you've ever seen. It's almost daily you'll go up and down and up and down with all the different twists and turns. And, you know, this is just a few days after the Roy Moore defeat in Alabama. And so when you want to talk about, you talk about winners, but you talk about losers too. I'm kind of segueing away your show here. I apologize.
No. But, we've got plenty of losers too.
But it'll be interesting to find out whether or not the Democrats can keep the enthusiasm that they put together in Alabama to say, look, if we really get our act together, we can win some of these. And there are districts that are close out there that could swing. Now, you have to calculate in that the maps overall for congressional seats in the nation are cut toward Republicans. But, of course, in Illinois, that's different. But still, you're going to see that factor play out.
Now, let me ask.
Go ahead.
I mean, I feel like, you know, I can already feel the cynicism boiling here. But the, you know, with the tax overhaul happening and getting done right now, I mean, it really doesn't impact in terms of tax returns and whether or not all the itemized stuff till next year, the year, 2019. Right. You're going to see some payroll deductions coming up in February. What starts in February and March? Primaries. right? And then there will be a midterm election in 2018 before people feel the results of what happens with this tax overhaul. Am I too cynical to be thinking that way politically, or was that by design?
I think that's by design.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, clever of the Republicans to structure it that way. The question is it too clever by half? Are people going to see through it? Are they going to look and see what $3 more I'm getting a week? You know, whatever it is. For a lot of people, it won't be a big difference in their paychecks. People remember actual tax cuts. Obama cut taxes.
George W. Bush cut taxes
in a real way. I remember that tax cut. That made a big difference. People will measure that, and if they see that it's not a big tax cut, they will remember that corporations, the very wealthy, other folks are getting a much, much larger share of this cut, and that will irritate.
Well, you also have to remember that health costs are rising for employees. So you may be getting a tax cut of $3 a week like you were talking about, but your health care costs may be going up 15, and you're going to look at your checking and said, hey, wait a second.
Right, and that's also inside the tax bill because we haven't seen the whole thing. You may get extra or less tax, but now you can't deduct, and you find yourself it doesn't make sense. Let's get local on the winners because, you know, as we move past what happened with the tax bill, let's talk local because there is an effect on this. Of course, you have in the winner category, Eitan, Rahm Emanuel. Why?
This, you know, Rahm Emanuel has had a terrible run as mayor, just to put it frankly. He's even in the last couple of years, in the last couple of months, his infrastructure trust actually cost Chicago taxpayers money.
We talked about that last week. That's amazing.
Police misconduct cost the city somewhere in the neighborhood of $700 million in the last few years. It cost the city $52 million in 2016. $52 million. That's an enormous amount of money. The CPS fiasco, his hand-picked head of CPS, the second one that had to leave because of corruption. I mean, despite these blows against him, he's on this kind of successful, touchy-feely tour of television and radio and people are kind of buying it. I've seen a couple of reports that say people aren't buying it. I think people are buying it. I think people, this is the more refined version of the fuzzy blue sweater.
Well, he seems to have dug in as an anti-Trump voice, meaning he went on Colbert talking about that. He likes to play in that space because in a way he doesn't have to talk about the things that are happening here. I don't know. I mean, I wonder how much this tax overhaul is going to hurt Rahm Emanuel.
He's Trump of the Democrats, you know. He's what it makes him different from Trump and his policies. He spent $50 million of city money to build a stadium for DePaul. Ostensibly for DePaul, what was it really supposed to do? Now we see it was to get the NBA draft here. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's a big waste of.
He's going to Ray. I mean, we've talked about this on the show, and the fact that the city has some serious budget holes coming up in the next couple of years, and he's already made his speech saying, "Hey, we're going to feel it in taxes, and we all saw our property taxes go up. They're going to go up again."
Right.
But when you're now juxtaposing that against a federal tax law that doesn't let you deduct those taxes, it's a different game. Yeah, there might be a little bit more political consequence to raising taxes when you can't go to the tax man and be like, well, I had, you know, and find a way to get some money back.
Well, especially when you're talking about combining your overall deduction with how much you can count toward your mortgage, too. So if you got a cap of, what is it, $10,000 now, you know, a lot of people are going to be hurting because of that. And if you are faced with those kinds of problems, you're going to be looking for somebody to blame.
Right. Ray Long and Eitan McKaylee in studio. We're talking about the winners. I also had on my list for winners, Susana Mendoza, the Illinois State Comptroller, who has,
you know,
has come in and has become the proxy, if you will. I mean, that's how Rauner wants to call her. She's a mouthpiece for Madigan, but she's a good one. And in the way she was criticizing the governor said some disparaging things, and she came back and said, "You can't handle a 5'3" woman from Chicago criticizing you." And right away, you're like, the gloves are off. I mean, she continues to get herself into the headlines and talk sort of the defense of the Democrats in Illinois.
Yeah, she's always been a fireball. I watched her come up through the legislature, and she would stand up and get passionate about different issues. It could have been early on in her career when George Ryan was governor, and she'd be saying, you know, we got to have another death penalty condition. You know, you got to be able to add another piece of the equation when you calculate a sentence for death. And she got impassioned during the Blagojevich impeachment because first she could support Blagojevich, but then saw how he screwed things up, and she was screaming about how he tried to shake down the top executive at a children's hospital to get donations for his campaign fund. She has been one who is not afraid to wear her emotions and her thoughts on her sleeve.
What I think is really interesting about it is that she is getting his attention. He is not doing well in the argument against the Illinois State Comptroller. Before, it was Leslie Munger, was his own person. He could do a lot of different things to move and hide and change narratives. But now, every time he wants to do something, Susana Mendoza's there going, well, you owe money.
Well, let's go back a little bit and see who Susana Mendoza is. She comes, and I'm going to say this as a compliment. It may sound like a backhanded compliment, but it's going to be a compliment. She comes out of HDO. She comes out of the most hackish part of Chicago machine politics.
Yeah, she's a machine politician.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was brought in really to help defeat the independent Latino organization that Chuy Garcia is the most prominent standard bearer.
She's a co-chair of Rahm Emanuel's re-election campaign. Yeah.
And she's outgrown each one of these organizations. Right. This is the compliment part. Is that every time she gets put in a hole, Madigan spokesperson, before that HDO hack, she's burst out of that. So to me, that's the mark of a politician who knows how to use organization, but is a little bit smarter than the organizations that she's a part of. She's a real leader, and she's going places.
Hey, Tom McKaylee, Ray Long in studio tonight. We're reloading the news. 312-981-7200. We're going to come back and do the losers next. 847 says Trump and the UN vote. So a little teaser. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Rob Martier's news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio tonight, reloading the news. Eitan McKaylee, longtime journalist, author, his book, The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America from the Age of the Pullman Porters to the Age of Obama, was won a ton of awards.
Out in paperback in March.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, great.
Ray Long, investigative reporter from the Chicago Tribune as well. Both regulars here to reload. All right, so we've done biggest stories and winners. Let's get to the losers. And I agree with the listener who texted in right before we started, losers, UN and Nikki Haley, and the Jerusalem debacle that's happening. And I have to say, I'm amazed because last week, Randy Bellisomo and Ken Davis were in, and we were talking about Nikki Haley being a winner. And then they go and they pen this letter that essentially tells all the other countries that they're allies and otherwise to the American interests that if you do not sign this resolution that says that we're moving or we're recognizing the capital as Jerusalem, we're paying attention. This is personal. And it was a shakedown. It was a strange, strange international shakedown.
Nikki Haley is still a winner. She comes out ahead in this within the Republican Party and especially within the Jewish forces within the Republican Party, which is a small but growing contingent. Sheldon Adelson, in particular, is now one of the largest funders of the Republican Party, and he has a very idiosyncratic, you could say, weird view of what needs to get done in Israel. This was really something that he was personally demanding. So this helps Nikki Haley with him and people that think like him. It helps her position herself for a future in the Republican Party. Frankly, you know, this is a decision, honestly, that it really will have no consequence at all within Israel, except for to further antagonize.
I was going to say rile up the Palestinians
and confirm for any Palestinians that were out there, and there were probably just a few holdouts at this point who thought that the United States was actually still an honest broker in the Middle East peace process. Every Palestinian, almost every Palestinian, had given up. Now every Palestinian would have given up.
What do you take on this, Ray?
You know, taking names. We're taking names. This is retaliation in kind of a schoolyard type, angry bully type way here. Trump, I'm pulling from an AP story here I'm looking at right now. And, you know, he was saying for all these nations, they take our money and then vote against us. They take hundreds of millions of dollars, even billions of dollars, and then they vote against us. We're watching those votes. Let them vote against us. We'll save a lot. We don't care. Okay, that doesn't sound presidential to me, but it also plays into that exact mix that you were talking about.
Yeah, it's so strange that I just thought I too put in the loser category because I was like, well, that's not how you want to make friends. Is I mean, this is an issue that is way bigger than the United States. Peace and negotiation of land and ideal everything that goes into Israel and Palestine. The idea that the United States is going to get involved in that in an aggressive kind of way, which we have been doing for a long time, but to be so blatant about it and then tell everybody else who's players in the region, you better vote how we do or else. Right. That's not how I want our country to be.
It's hard to get everybody on board when you're against everybody when they're not with you.
Nathan, what is this story even about? I try to understand the Jerusalem recognition story, and I'm having a hard time.
Look, Jerusalem is a small city. Historically, it's a city that it's had a Jewish majority since the mid-19th century. Okay, so it's a city that has had not just a long Jewish history, but a Jewish history that predates the State of Israel. There is a strong attachment, however, to Jerusalem from the Palestinian side as well, that goes back just as deep. It's a historic, religious, and emotional issue. It's not a practical issue because the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, is already in Jerusalem. The Israeli Supreme Court is already in Jerusalem. It's not something that's going to have an impact on the ongoing process that exists now within Jerusalem, which is to essentially squeeze the Palestinians and try to step by step push them out of Jerusalem or at least infringe on their...
Is that... I mean, because the other thing I read about, and I was, you know, I blame myself for not staying on top of the story of what's happening in Israel, just because I feel like there's a complacency that, I guess there's a tenable peace deal right now where they're not as at each other's throats as they have been. But then when I read more about it, it seems like the Israelis are there's a systematic kind of way that they're dealing with the Palestinians right now, pushing them back and almost living in a military state.
Remember the occupation, which is what it is legally. You have people within Israel today and outside of Israel that don't even like calling it an occupation, but legally it's an occupation. Within Israeli law, it's an occupation. The reason the soldiers are stationed all over the West Bank is because it's an occupation. So without the emotional response, we just have to call it an occupation. The occupation has now gone on for 50 years. You're talking about several generations that have grown up under Israeli military control within the West Bank and in Gaza. It's a different situation. You have Palestinian local control, but you have an inability for Hamas, the terror group really that runs Gaza, to form a government that can reach out to the rest of the world. They're surrounded by Israel on one side and Egypt on the other. Then there are also a lot of Palestinians who live within Israel proper. 20%, if not more, maybe 25%, if they did an accurate count, of the Israeli citizen population are Palestinians.
That's the part I think that you don't, when you talk about that kind of number, 20%, I don't, as an American, you don't think that at all. The way it has been told to me, and I feel like I'm a good example of people who will take in that story and understand it, but at the same time have no concept because I'm not living there, is that it is Israelis living in Israel, and they want more area of the West Bank, and Palestinians are troublemakers. And that's not true.
Well, and look, there's other factors that are at play here, too. We as Americans look at Israel and we see a country that's led by a guy that speaks English with an American accent, who grew up in New Jersey most of his life. But Bibi Netanyahu will not be prime minister for very much longer. He will be gone, I think it's safe to predict, within a year.
And which way does the politics trend?
Very hard to know what will happen. It's almost. I will really hesitate to make a prediction that way until we get very close to the actual event. But when he goes, you will have a country that is revealed to be an actual Middle Eastern country. More than half of the Jews within Israel today are Jews who are descended from Jews who lived in Iraq, in Egypt, in other parts of North Africa. They're not people whose ancestors come from Europe or South America or somewhere like that. These are essentially people who are part of the Arab culture, part of the Middle Eastern culture. So it's where you start. Sometimes people think of Israel as a kind of South Africa type of situation,
right.
But it's really it's not. It really has to be looked at in a very, very different way.
I'll pay attention to that.
Baghdad was a third Jewish until the early 1950s. Those Jews were kicked out by a government that was inspired and in some ways run by Nazis who went out of Germany and went to Iraq. So this the story of what happened to the Jews in World War II continued in the Middle East. So all that is stuff that's coming into play now.
It's still at play.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, let's keep moving on the losers because we had Republicans. We kind of went over that as well. Let's go back to local. Eitan, you have on yours Bruce Rauner, and I kind of mentioned Susana Mendoza as a winner. What happened this week for Bruce Rauner that you put him in the loser category?
Well, he just continues to show that he's a bad fit for politics. You know, he not only was revealed to, for some reason, on the administration level, he didn't release information about an outbreak of Legionnaires' disease in a veterans' nursing home for 6 days, according to a report by WBEZ Radio, which is strange. Why not just report it? And then to try to cover it up in this way, and then try to fight back to say that his administration did the right thing here, that's just making it worse. That makes no sense to me at all. Then going after one of his former supporters, the billionaire Michael Sachs, to go and antagonize him at this particular juncture. Again,
right.
I just don't get it.
It's hard to understand, Ray. I mean, you were in Springfield for a long time. Is Governor Rauner a shoo-in to be the Republican nominee at this point? I'm confused about Republican politics in the state of Illinois.
Well, I think the Republicans are too, really. They have, in the legislature, been basically told by Rauner to follow him or get off the wagon. And several of them got off the wagon as a result of that. And actually, when it came down to brass tacks, they joined with Democrats and overrode his veto of tax hike. But what really mystifies me about this Legionnaires thing in Quincy is this is not the first time they've had a Legionnaires problem in Quincy, and they were supposed to have gone in and fixed it. You would think at the first scintilla of any chance that there was going to be another outbreak, they would be jumping up and down and isolating people quickly.
Oh, man. And it just seems more often he's getting in the news for this kind of stuff as opposed to getting in front of, you know, the issues that he's going to have to run on to run for re-election. And he put out, I think it might have been this week, he put out the 10 accomplishments that he had. And right away, all the critics were like, that's not yours. You stood in the way. You can't take credit for that. I mean, they went point by point.
Right.
I mean, it's usually not that easy to break apart somebody's accomplishments list.
Right.
But in the case of critics of Governor Rauner, they did.
Yeah, they were talking about, reforming education and things like that, that he really was a major blocker to most of the way until they overrode him, right, and put more money into education. And he claimed that because there is a way you can donate now that you have a, kind of a pseudo school choice option there. But it's just not straight up. And that's what I think is getting a lot of people upset about politics now, is that politicians are more and more willing to bend the rules of truth and try to swing it into their lane.
Yeah.
And people are getting fed up with it. I think we saw that in the Trump election.
Well, I think that more, and I don't want to speak for people who support the president or supported him in his campaign, but I mean, you have to ask the question, did they get what they were asking for?
Right.
Because as you just said, people are fed up with the way politics aren't bending. A good example on Trump, and people who are loyal to him and voted for him, and he's having success. But even reading into like the way that he will take everything and go right back to being a politician and say it's a Democrat's fault, or it's this person's fault, and do the exact same stuff that he said he was not going to do.
Right.
And
or
he does
fake
it every
news,
and every,
of course.
Yeah, right, or fake news.
Yeah.
Ray Long, Eitan Michaeli in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Coming up, my favorite, overreported and underreported. We'll do that coming up here on The Download. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in on a conversation. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio tonight. Ray Long, Eitan McKaylee. We are reloading this week's news, and we are to the section of our segment where we do overreported and underreported. We'll probably just stick with the overreported until we get to the news at 9:30, then pick up the underreported on the second half here. But why don't we start with you, Ray Long. Ray, what do you got for overreported?
I think lists. You know, the top 10 list of this, the top 10 list of that.
Tis the season.
It is the season. We see it. You know, AP comes out with a list every year of the top 10 stories in Illinois, and we put some out there, and they're all interesting, right? They're good conversation starters. But I'm tired of it. A reader comes out with the worst of Chicago this week, and I'm like, come on, okay, enough, right?
Well, I've just seen too many. It used to be just curated stuff. Journalists coming up with their top 10 music picks or news stories. But now you're seeing top 10 Google searches, top 10 Facebook posts, top 10 retweets.
Right.
And now that's becoming news because now people will report on that saying, oh, it wasn't like Trump didn't make the top five in the retweets. And there were a bunch of thought pieces about whether or not he'd be mad about not making the top five in retweets. I was like, get off it.
Yeah, man.
Like, we're just making up news. I mean, that interpretation part.
It's too much.
The download list will be out next week.
Yeah. And we'll be contributing, right?
Right. And I always feel like you start to get a list now because people are off for a week and a half. And they're like, I don't really want to put this list together right before New Year's. Because you can't put the list out in early January. That's a faux pas.
Absolutely.
Right?
I get it. It's a good time to recap. It's a good time to sit back. I've even taken a list out with my wife over dinner and said, okay, guess the top 10 or whatever, you know. But I don't think I want to know what the word was that was tweeted out the most or the Google search the most. Or today I saw one that was on top of the Twitter moments page that was like, these are the great actresses and actors who got tattoos this year. You know, I mean, come on, I don't need a list of that.
Where can I find that? That sounds good.
Just go to Moments on Twitter.
Nice. All right, what do you got, Eitan, for most overreported?
Everything, most overreported, everything on Fox News. I mean, they've just really become the Pravda of the Trump administration. It's really a sad degeneration of a news organization that does have a lot of serious journalists working for it and does have, and this is an age where journalism is just taking off. You got journalists everywhere demonstrating their professionalism, demonstrating their courage, and then you've got Fox News with Sean Hannity today tweeted out, "Hey NBC News, here's some real news for you, not that fake news stuff you always put out." He was tweeting an NBC News story.
Yeah.
You know, he just is not even understanding his own terminology.
Yeah. The fake news and what I also find to be peculiar and I understand, I get it. The president is a master communicator on social media. He really is. As much as everybody wants to, and it's infuriating, and I'm there half the time being like, stop it. He knows what he's doing. He's not, and you saw that when one of the lawyers said, came out a month ago on one of the tweets and said, well, we wrote that for him. It was just reworded. And you're like, oh, so this whole Twitter storm may not be sort of Trump in his bathroom tweeting whatever he feels. There may be an actual strategy to this, and a lot of players setting those up
to run out at 4 a.m.
That's my point. Absolutely are. But I will say, when I think about him and Fox News in this cozy relationship he has, where he'll call out CBS, NBC, ABC, but not Fox, and he'll make it point in parentheses, but not Fox. They're great.
Yeah,
I've never seen a sitting president do that. Even Obama or others, the liberals, they never be like MSNBC's great guys, but Fox is terrible. Like, they just wouldn't do that.
The day of the Mike Flynn indictment, their news was all about that poor woman in California who was killed by an accidental discharge of a firearm that happened to be held by an undocumented immigrant. I mean, and everybody was saying, like, well, this is not justice. You know, this is horrible. And they were just generating hatred for not just undocumented immigrants. Let's be frank, it was for all Latinos. And that's really what this was about, just generating hatred. When you look at the particulars of the case, this was someone with a gun. The gun went off. Someone was killed. Tragedy, not murder. Yeah. That's, you know, that was pretty simple, but they obfuscated it all to generate emotion on a day that everybody else was focused on the criminal guilty plea, not even an indictment of a former national security advisor.
You know, and to me, it's more, I just don't really like the style of the cable news talkers, whether the MSNBC or Fox. Mm. And MSNBC, I don't want to put them necessarily in the same category. Mm. But the concept of taking a news story, being able to opinionate all over it. and come in the idea of it being news. And I'm saying WGN does the much opinionating. That's what we're doing here. We're analyzing an opinion. But we don't call it, I don't say this is the news show. I don't say this is welcome to the news tonight. You know, that Rob does the news. I'm talking to you guys about analyzing it.
Right.
And so I think that that's where I think Fox News always throws me off, because I was reading a story about, who was it? I think it was one of the sexual harassment stories about Matt Lauer. And they were so mad at Megyn Kelly in the article because Megyn Kelly had one of the victims on her show.
Oh, right, right.
That they took a paragraph to talk bad about Megyn Kelly. And I get it. They have a bad relationship, Fox News and Megyn Kelly. But I was like, this kills the everything about the authenticity, or this concept that this is a source and I should read this and this is objective, that you spent this much time on Megyn Kelly, which was not the story.
Objectivity is not objectivity. It is not their forte and not what they're even trying to do. It gets back to that idea of bending the truth. I mean, in some ways, they're not even telling the truth, but they're only willing to write about things that fit into this area of rage.
And I would almost, we can go on, and I want to take a break because we can come back on the other side of the news. But it almost feels as well, and I saw the Breitbart editor today came out, and he had an interview where he's like, Roy Moore was a terrible candidate. He was flawed. He was going to lose. We knew he was going to lose. You're like, wow. I mean, because before that, Breitbart and Steve Bannon were really pushing. They were pushing against. They even kind of intimated they believed the accusers of Roy Moore. And you're like, well, Breitbart was at the center of trying to discredit that witness. You know, like everything about it. So there's this weird sort of, we don't need to worry about what we said yesterday.
Well, they're hoping
if Breitbart tells you it's raining, you don't need an umbrella that day.
Maybe
guys are just are totally incompetent as journalists.
Yeah.
You know,
Eitan McKenzie, and you know what? They are. I'll push back a little bit because I know a couple of those guys. One of those guys at Breitbart, one of the big editors, was an intern at NPR here in Chicago, and not a dumb kid. And he knows, and he's a smart guy. And I'm not saying that I agree with the way that they do their stuff, but I don't know if they're incompetent. I think they just have a strategy. And I think that's why I always push back, even on Trump. I don't think he's incompetent. I think he's got a strategy. We just may not be on the same wavelength of what the strategy is.
They could be incompetent and have a strategy.
That's true.
That's a giveaway. It's just a bad strategy.
Ray Long in studio tonight. We're reloading the news. Coming back, we'll do underreported and what stories took us down the rabbit hole. Stay with us. Hey, all right. Thanks, Rob. It's Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 10 o'clock, so excited that Mr. Steve Gadlin is back in the building. We're going to do a special holiday edition of The Frying Pan. Oh, man, we used to do this segment all the time, and Steve is back with a new idea. Usually, the way we did it is, we said, when he's ready, he'll let us know. It's almost like the bat signal. It kind of goes to Gadlin frying pan. You see it over Chicago. And I got one of those this week. So Steve Gadlin back in the building coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. But right now we're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right, let's get to the underreported stories. I have one that A.D. Quigg talked about from the Daily Line this week that I thought about, the Cook County Board budget. And this is one that we were talking about a lot this fall with the soda tax and then the repeal of the soda tax. And then all the commissioners were going to get together and find a way to keep all these jobs. And then they couldn't.
You know, and then they put a budget forward with a bunch of layoffs, and then Tim Evans and said, not so fast. You can't tell me who to lay off. So now it's just kind of stuck. No, there is no budget. They're just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. And then the little part of the tax overhaul that is repealing the individual mandate affects the Cook County health system more than anyone else, because that is the last line of defense, and one of the reasons there wasn't Affordable Care Act to begin with, because so many people who didn't have insurance were coming into emergency rooms and didn't have money to pay for it, and the cities and the states and the governments were eating it. Right? That's the idea.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Now they said everyone has to have insurance, so we're not in that situation.
Right.
You can get it cheap through the government. That you can debate on whether or not that ever happened, but that's why it was there. So by taking away the individual mandate, people who can't afford insurance or don't want insurance, they don't have to have it, but they're going to start again coming into the emergency room just when the Cook County budget and the Cook County health system has kind of gotten into check. I find that to be an underreported story that could have some severe consequences on the budget here in Chicago.
Yeah, I think we could all be paying higher property taxes, obviously, as a result of something like this if it really gets out of control, and it threatens to.
You know, I'll speak as an Obamacare exchange user. Let's break this down, okay? Low-income people in this country and in this state have Medicaid. Seniors have Medicare. Most people get health insurance through their employers. The people that are using the Obamacare exchanges are independent professionals, lawyers, authors, public relations folks, people who have small businesses usually, and don't want to, many of us could probably go through our businesses to purchase health insurance, but that's complicated, and we may not have an LLC or a business entity that we can do that through, or we may not have a large enough staff to buy as a group plan. For me, Obamacare this year, the price went way, way down. I am very satisfied with where I'm at with Obamacare. I'm now paying, last year I was paying more than my friends who got their health insurance through their employers. This year I'm paying the same or even a little bit less. So to me, Obamacare is working the way that it was supposed to. I do understand why the Republicans are opposed to
Obamacare. And I will say, just from sitting in this chair and reading the tweets and talking to listeners, and there is no consistent storyline here, because I'll have somebody text in and they'll say, it went up 600% because of this, that, or the other. I mean, there's so many circumstances that are different. But my point being that that's one of the problems with the narrative of the Affordable Care Act is you'll have your story, Eitan, and then you'll have Jeff's story from somewhere, or Tom's story from somewhere, or Denise's story, and they never are the same.
If you're looking at, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield plans, this year the cost went down. Now, a lot of people thought that they were clever and were getting different companies and different plans and, you know, wanted this or wanted that. But if you wanted one of the Blue Cross Blue Shield plans down, Illinois, it's gone very well. A lot of other states, California in particular, Obamacare is totally stable. It's worked out
And you see that more people are signing up for it. But the issue will be, in this case, if the individual mandate's not there, you will have less people who will, because that was the big thing. There was a penalty. If you did not get health insurance, you had a penalty. And that penalty was pretty big. And that forced people in situations to not be in a position where they didn't have insurance going into a hospital system like Cook County.
Yes.
That's just my underreport. I think it's an interesting. Nothing's changed in five days, but it'll be interesting to see what happens coming up in the next year.
Well, I think it's one of those stories that you have to really stick with it and try to understand. And a lot of folks don't either have the time or the patience to do that. And it kind of reminds me of the time that Illinois went through mandatory auto insurance, right? Only this is on steroids, because it just impacts so many people in so many ways, and it's more expensive.
Well, and it's healthcare. I mean, healthcare is you know, you can go without a car.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You have choices.
Right.
All right, let's go. Eitan, what do you got for underreported? You have net neutrality and the Rubashkin pardon.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I wrote down pardon, but it's actually a commutation.
Yeah, right.
So let me start with that one. That's a guy, Shalom Rubashkin, was a meat packer in Iowa, a kosher meat packer in Iowa. Now, he's serving a very small subsection of the Jewish community, that part of the Jewish community that keeps kosher to the extent that they won't buy non-kosher meat. That was a constituency that was very loyal to the Rubashkin family because it's very difficult to keep this this pipeline, if you will, going. He ran his plant in a kind of shoddy way. He hired undocumented immigrants. He hired children. He had all sorts of bad conditions and also had some tax violations. For these relatively serious crimes, but relatively minor serious crimes, he received a 27-year sentence. Mm. And this is from a judge who's had a lot of kind of questionable relationships. She, her husband has been involved in investing in prisons for undocumented immigrants. There's a lot of stuff that's weird.
Just questionable
here.
Relationships with judges, underreported
but,
story, right?
But what was going on here really was that Donald Trump was working hard to win over this Orthodox Jewish constituency. These are the Haredi Jews. These are the Jews who live in largely Jewish neighborhoods. They're the ones who, you know, dress in dress frum. They dress in, you know, black and white, the men. The women wear headscarves and long skirts. This is a community that does not feel very well represented by government right now. And Trump just won them all over. That's a very powerful constituency, by the way, in New York City and in New York State. So Trump is...
They know that name, right?
Oh, yeah. And Trump is thinking in terms often, I think, thinks in terms of New York politics.
So he commuted his sentence.
Yeah, he commuted the sentence. He served 7 years. And Rubashkin, there was a Haredi vigil in front of Rubashkin's house in Brooklyn with hundreds, at some points, thousands of people standing in front to show their support.
That's a great underreported, because I didn't read that. That's there you go. That's why we do the underreported category. All right, let's keep going. Ray, what do you got for underreported?
I may butcher the actual name. I'm a print guy. What can I say? I apologize ahead of time for this. But there was a fellow who was a priest, and he ended up jumping out 80. I'm not sure if he jumped over the entire 82 floors, but it was downtown
Aqua,
at the Blue
building.
Aqua Hotel. His name was James Cesar, or if I butchered that, I apologize. But
he was a priest from Ohio.
He was from Columbus, suburban Columbus, and he had worked as a Catholic priest at the Church of Resurrection in New Albany, Ohio. And he apparently... jumped to his death after some kind of misconduct allegations surfaced. He was 44 years old. He was placed on administrative leave, and it happened right downtown here in Chicago.
Just around the block here.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting story, too, because it happened in a block traffic, and it would happen on Wednesday, didn't that, or Thursday?
Yes,
and
Wednesday
today
morning.
Was the day that all the stuff came out about it. It was a couple days later. I saw it in the paper today, and it's just an interesting, you know, I mean, those kind of stories are always,
you don't
know,
man.
They're just,
what, yeah, and you don't know what people are going through, and you don't know what is happening, and you don't know a lot of the potential that could have been involved in that.
312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. All right, we'll take our break here. When we come back, we will go down the rabbit hole and find out which stories will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years from now. Ray Long, Eitan McHaley, stay with us. Reloading this week's news, wrapping up here with Ray Long and Eitan McHaley. We're going to get down to the rabbit hole now. This is my favorite. I said the over-reporter was my favorite, but I felt like this was it. Let's get to the rabbit hole. Which story took you down the rabbit hole? This is one that, you know, not necessarily front page news, is something that could be a bigger topic issue where you found yourself kind of spending more time than you thought on that area.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with you, Ray? What do you got for your rabbit hole?
Well, actually, this is my personal rabbit hole because I spent several weeks going over records in federal courthouse regarding the anti-patronage Shachman decree and Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios.
Wow. Good stuff.
And so, you know, I kind of got lucky. Folks had just not been looking at the files, and there were a lot of things that just showed the history of the assessor's office and how it was sort of out of control for a while. There were, now we knew kind of the big highlights that he had hired his son and his sister, but that wasn't even part of the decree, because the decree basically says hire people on merit, promote them on merit, do things on merit,
right,
basis, and get the politics out, with the exception, of course, of a few inner circle people that you need to be loyal to you. Mm. But this the documents detailed improper hiring, improper firing, general reluctance, even with a federal monitor in place for 5 years to really get the squeeze the politics out, wring it out of the office. And as a result, they still are trying to get out of from under a federal monitor. There, of course, this has been the Shachman case goes back decades.
When you say they, do you mean particularly the assessor's office?
Yes, the assessor's office in particular, yeah. And they have not been able to shake away all the politics, and they've only got 260 or so people involved in that office, and yet they make internal decisions that are troubling.
Well,
you saw
what you guys did, the four-part series in the Tribune on Joe Berrios.
Excellent series.
Yeah, I guess it's not surprising to me. I always knew that there always has been the word, if you ever talked anything about taxes, people are like, well, if you get a lawyer, you just can go right to the assessor. They'll do it, and you can get less money on your taxes.
Yeah, this is a curious
part of it. I just
never
got a lawyer.
Yeah, it's a curious part of it. Joe Berrios, he's come out of that board of review that's basically the tax appeal office before he was assessor, and he saw the value of people appealing, and so he encourages people to appeal. But one of the things that you have to stop and think about is that if your taxes go down, it's kind of like whack-a-mole that right. somebody else's
the,
taxes
the bigger stuff
are going
that was
up.
In the story that was alarming was the big pieces of land or the big property, the buildings, and people who are politically connected. And when you actually assess their property, it's lower than it should be because they're trying to give political favors back for the same old, whether it's campaign finance, whatever it might be. The point being that there's something going on that's fishy in that office.
Even the appeal process. Remember, these are attorneys who now have generations of keeping their business going on appeals. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but those lawyers are also big donors to Berrios's office, right?
In many cases.
How can you do that? How can you be in a suck?
It's kind of a crazy... I mean,
it's
there's
the same thing as I always get thrown out of whack when I think of city council, and I'm like, some of the aldermen, the standing aldermen or the Speaker of the House have law firms that deal with the state and the city governments. How can you do that?
It's unconscionable.
Right. Well, I just don't know how we let that happen.
Well, what was interesting was the rabbit hole was just going in and looking at some of the documents that were maybe at the end of his first term, 4 years into his term, he was still getting reviews that said you got to professionalize your HR department. You got to do this and that. Mm-hmm. And they just weren't doing it.
All right, Eitan, what do you got for your story that took you down the rabbit hole?
For me, I spent a lot of time this week doing math about African-American voters all over the country and kind of looking at Alabama to see whether there's a model there. Because really what you have is people often assume, for whatever reason, that African-American voters turn out in smaller percentages than white voters. But the truth is that African-American voters tend to come out more than white voters, particularly if you look at things like voter suppression efforts, voter ID, the number of African-American men who are incarcerated. If you start subtracting all of these, African-Americans really come out in much, much larger numbers than white. Folks.
Do you think they'll play a role, that voting bloc coming up in 2018?
Well, Democrats keep rediscovering that African-American voters are their key to success. Barack Obama won the presidency twice, not not so much with overwhelming white support, but with overwhelming African-American support that put him over in key states like Illinois. If you talk to the folks on the Democratic side who are running for governor, they know that the race is all about the African-American electorate. Even more specifically, they know that this that the race for them is all about African-American women in Chicago.
And you saw in Alabama, that was a big part of, yes, of the Roy Moore. And you also saw white women, which an alarming rate, voting for Roy Moore.
Right.
I don't mean alarming. That's a negative word. I should say in a surprising rate.
Since you know, Roy
but
Moore is...
All the allegations against Roy Moore, you would think that would not be his voting block. But it turned out to be.
It turns out that race is a stronger determinant of how people vote than almost anything else. Yeah.
My rabbit hole story was Apple and lawsuits and the battery and the slowdown. So I didn't know much about this, and I started reading, and I started, unfortunately, going down the rabbit hole on it. But first off, the first story was, yes, they came out and said, yes, we purposely slow down older iPhones because the batteries are weaker, and this helps them be able to take it. And you're like, okay, that makes sense. So they're not malicious. They're trying to help your phone. And that's what's causing some of the problems. But then I read this great piece which said, but that suggests that for years on end, probably a good better part of a decade, they knew that and they didn't tell anybody. And more importantly, which I think is interesting, is it only costs $39 to replace the battery. And when you replace your battery from your Apple 6, Apple 7, whatever it might be, it's, like I said, $39 and everything works again. There is no slowdown because the battery can handle it. And so from this point, like I said, the better part of a decade, Apple has not been telling us that. There's no commercials for an Apple battery. There's no, they are hoping on the ignorance of their customers to be like, well, this phone doesn't work anymore. I guess I'll get the new one that U2's dancing on the screen on my TV for. You know, I think there's something there, this idea that somehow there's these Apple apologists that are like, they're trying to help you, when for whatever reason, that organization, that corporation gets surpassed because they have loyal followers that will protect and defend them, not unlike, everything else in the world.
It's like politics.
It's like politics. But I mean, there is something to be said about why this wasn't called out by Apple 10 years ago and why they're doing it now. And also the lawsuits that are actually coming up and popping up, they have nothing to do with that. They're just strictly about don't slow my phone down.
Yeah, right.
And people are saying you're actually going to ruin the chance to make a difference by having these frivolous lawsuits.
It's the new Gilded Age. You know, they're going to try and sell us everything. They're going to try and shake the change out of our pockets if we let
them. There you go. Eitan McKaley and Ray Long in studio. All right, which story is going to be remembered 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years from this week? Ray, what do you got?
Well, in the short term, and maybe 10, 20 years, I think the... poor 5-year-old kid that got shot his second time.
I wouldn't even talk about that.
And he...
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, I think people... That's one of those kind of Chicago stories that will be stuck in your mind, like a Dantrell Davis getting shot back in that
early
90s.
It's a kid on the south side, 5-year-old kid who was shot one time before, and then he got shot again.
Yeah,
He was hit in a drive-by shooting, and... now at 5, he got a hold of his father's gun, which was lying around, and
how is this not a national? That should be underreported. That should be all the categories.
Yeah,
and Donald Trump should be up tweeting about this. Should say that this is unacceptable. We need this is as much a wake up call as anything else. A 3 and 5-year-old. I mean, one kid twice.
Yeah,
that's
and
unbelievable.
It's and I just think that's one of those kind of moments that you're going to remember.
I hope so.
Yeah.
What do you got for the story?
I tend to take the historian's lens, so I'm thinking like 1,000, 2,000 years, and I keep thinking that the Trump presidency, reminds me, if you look at back at Roman history and you look at the lead up to Julius Caesar, you had like the left and the right of the Roman world, the Roman political world at that time, kind of moving toward a dictatorship, right? As the wheels of the republic started to slow down and eventually break apart in terms of how they were able to manage this larger and more diverse empire, and I think that there's a lot of analogies to be made there. You know, Trump is one of these figures.
So Trump presidency.
So in other words, Trump tweets while U.S. burns.
I'll give you the exact analogy for me is Trump is Crassus. Trump is the guy that anticipated Julius Caesar and who had a crackdown against people that wanted to broaden the Senate, that wanted to bring Gauls into the Senate, and that wanted to do things to kind of expand Roman.
We're getting all sorts of
not
Nero
in
knowledge.
The fiddle, then.
Yeah, we're getting some history. Mine. I'll just go with. I was going to go tax, but I'm going to go with that weird skull looking meteor. I don't think that's going to play out in the next couple weeks, and we'll be like, oh, remember that? And then 500 years will be like, take us to your leader. It'll be like, Ray Long, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Eitan McKaley, longtime journalist and author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. That'll be in paperback coming up here this spring.
Yes.
Guys, thanks so much for coming in here on the last day of the week, right before Christmas, to come in. I appreciate it. Happy holidays and a happy new year.
You Thank too. You.
All right, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. All right, coming up, the holiday tradition that is the frying pan. Steve Gadlin, the local inventor, back in the chair. He's ready to go. I know we are. 312-981-7200.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot. Frying pan hot.
Ah, love to hear that noise. How about it, everybody? Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brainchild behind a successful local business. I want to draw a cat for you. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan.
There it is. Yeah. That's good. Okay. Nice. It's a good sizzle.
Yeah. He's given us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan. Good
hey,
to see
man.
You, my friend.
It's good to be here, Justin. Gosh, just having this mic in my face brings back memories. I love it. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays. And it's great to have you. I recognize that this has become a holiday tradition on the download.
If you say so.
This will be our third Christmas here. And,
wow.
And I feel like we've always had, because I was looking back and I saw the pictures of the Christmas tree and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, this is a tradition to have Steve Gadlin in studio.
Nice.
The frying pan. And it is great to have you back. It's been a couple months and always a pleasure to have you in studio. So like you said, I mean, you right now as an inventor need workshopping.
Yep.
And you come to the download for that, and 312-981-7200. Our listeners will give it to you. All right. So why don't we start off? What do we want to talk about tonight?
Yeah,
what is the invention?
You know, as you mentioned, I only come back when I've got something really brilliant to share, and I've had a lot of time to percolate. And gosh, you know what I noticed with the holidays coming? There are all these blockbuster movies coming out. And something new you started seeing on these social medias and on television, where people are saying things like, hey, no spoilers.
Right.
We're tired of those spoilers.
Spoiler alert. Right.
Yeah, Well, hold that thought, Justin.
All right.
So they're tired of spoilers being ruined for them. And spoilers, for people who don't know, are the parts of the movie that really move the plot along. They're key plot points. So I've created an invention called Spoiler Alert.
All right.
And it's a device you carry with you into the movie theater. And you punch in a code for what movie you're watching. And as you're sitting there, anytime something really important's about to happen that maybe you don't want to know about because it's one of these spoilers, the device in your pocket will let out a real audible alarm and say, spoiler alert, beep, beep, spoiler alert, so you can cover your ears or turn away so that you don't have the movie ruined for you by accidentally catching some of those spoilers they put in.
Okay, so spoiler alert.
Yes.
A device that you take into the movie.
Yeah, you take it with you into the theater because, boy, the way everyone complains about accidentally hearing these spoilers, and again, those are the parts of the film that talk about key plot points and kind of spoil the movie for the viewer.
Right,
so
right.
What this does is it makes sure you don't hear those spoilers or see those spoilers when you're actually at the film, because it warns you with a real audible spoiler alert emanating from whichever pocket you've put the device in. It's a little thicker than a cell phone, a little larger, but it'll fit in most, most theater apparel pocket. And then you have the option of closing your eyes, covering your ears, or leaving the theater until it gives you the all clear. Because, of course, after the spoiler is passed, and because the device is synced up with the timing of the film, all clear.
It gives you an all clear.
Yeah. Very audible and visible all clear.
Well, I have a slew of questions.
Sure.
They come to mind right away. But again, I like to let the listeners go ahead and take the lead, both on text and phones. 312-981-7200. What do we think, Download Nation? What do we think of Spoiler Alert? A new idea by Steve Gadlin, the man who won on Shark Tank with his brilliant idea, iwantodrawacatforyou.com. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break, and we will come back, and we will start the... I already have some text coming in. Scott's on the line already.
Great.
People want to get
in. And honestly, with these holiday blockbusters coming out, what better time to invest in a product Spoiler Alert.
There's probably a lot of people right now in line for Star Wars that wish they had something like
this. Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's the idea. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more Steve Gadlin Frying Pan. Stay with us.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot, frying pan hot.
Yes, that music, that frying pan means that Steve Gadlin is back in studio. He's got a brand new invention, and he is here to workshop it. 312-981-7200. Spoiler alert. Give us another elevator pitch, Steve Gadlin.
Yeah, so the spoiler alert is for the person, and if you believe social media, for every person who just hates those spoilers. Spoilers are parts of films. They're special parts that they put in films to tell you interesting things, and sometimes they spoil the movie for people.
Mm-hmm.
Real interesting facts or big surprises. So spoiler alert is a device a little larger than a cell phone. You put it in your theater apparel pocket, and when you go to the theater, anytime it syncs with the movie, so anytime one of those spoilers is going to happen, it starts, alarms go off, spoiler alert,
mm-hmm.
To give you, the viewer, time to cover your ears or cover your eyes or otherwise leave the theater
right.
to avoid the spoiler.
Okay, 312-981-7200. We got a lot of people lined up already. This is somewhat of a Christmas miracle, I would say, Steve.
Yes, indeed.
Let's go to Scott in Uptown. Scott, what do you think of Spoiler Alert?
Dilly dilly, Justin, dilly dilly, Steve.
Dilly dilly, right down here. What do you like, Scott? What do you like? Do you like Spoiler Alert?
I do not. I'm going to say no.
All right.
I think I'm speaking for the other. Gentlemen in the audience, when they hear the spoiler alert, is also a great time to make a move on your most recent date next to you.
Yeah, that could be also something that could happen in that situation. I don't know if that would be something that you've thought about, but
No, and in fact, in user testing, we haven't seen
had that situation.
No, we've seen a lot of people happily avoiding spoilers.
Right.
But I'll be honest, a lot of the people we're doing with user testing with are coming by themselves or solos.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Let's go to Linda. Linda, what do you think of Spoiler Alert, Linda?
Well, I love this idea. I think it's, like, the most fabulous idea ever.
All right.
I mean, I wish that, like, somebody would have alerted me, like, at the end of Requiem for a Dream, that Jennifer Connelly was going to, like, lose her mind.
All right, you know, I got to let it go, because, no, I don't want to give away, Linda, I don't want to give away what happens at the end of Requiem
for a Dream. Right, see, that's one of those spoilers that
I wish I had the spoiler alert right now.
It would have been helpful for that call.
That was close.
Yes.
I had to hit the old delay button on that one.
That was very close.
Whew. All right, let's go to Gary. Gary, what do you think? What do you think of Spoiler Alert?
What do I think of it?
Yeah.
I got one major thing that I think would improve it. It's kind of rude to have noises in a movie theater with other people in there. I say you ought to hook it up to some kind of a virtual reality pair of goggles. So when the spoiler alert comes up, it blocks off your vision and it sends a white noise to your ears. You can't hear it. And
well,
I don't think you ought to listen to it's just new movies. I mean, I like to volunteer to get paid to watch all the old movies that are out there and put in where the marks should go for the spoiler alert.
Right. Thanks. That's a good idea.
No, that's great.
Thanks, Gary.
I'll say the virtual reality thing, we don't want to force people to turn away, because this the strange dichotomy about spoilers is some people love them, some people hate them. You know, most people hate them, but we want to give people the opportunity to maybe tune in a little closer when they hear that spoiler alert,
right.
So that'll give, you know, we don't want to forcefully block anyone's vision or hearing. Now, as far as the audio being difficult, that's fine. There's a vibrate mode, and both modes are accompanied by a strobe that goes off, a bright red strobe for when the spoiler is beginning, and then a bright green strobe for
okay.
when the spoiler is
ending.
All right,
so that's something new
yeah.
That's being revealed here, that there is a strobe as well.
Yeah.
773 says, good idea, but flawed execution. It would be too noisy. Maybe a vibrate function?
Well, yeah, and again, that's as I said, we do have vibrate. So we have three modes. We have audio only, we have audio plus vibrate, and then we have audio plus vibrate plus strobe.
Okay, so you get all three?
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people, that covers all.
Yeah.
Right. 847, Mary says, another brilliant idea, Steve.
Thanks.
But how in the world could this little device possibly anticipate or identify a spoiler?
Okay, first of all, I never said little. Okay, the device has some heft and some considerable size. In the old seats, if you're at a theater without recliners, you will need two seats to accommodate. Just the device itself is small, but the power, I don't want to get into science. What was the... how does it know the movies?
Yeah, how does it know the movie?
So it syncs up with the movies using state-of-the-art Bluetooth technology. So we have a Bluetooth connection to your cell phone, which connects to our internet, and mm-hmm. then it knows, you know, the same way like when you could put in a CD and it would tell you the titles of the tracks, similar technology.
Huh? Okay.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. Let's keep going here. Let's see. I'm going through some of the more... descriptive text
sure.
that we'll save towards the end.
Okay.
Tom 708 says, the only issue is that don't you want silent? I mean, this is really where a lot of people are kind of hung up
mm-hmm.
that, you know, movie theaters, since you want silence, they tell you to turn the devices off. So why would you bring a device in that would actually be noisy?
Well, if you want to do everything big cinema tells you to do, then sure, turn your devices off. But
right.
I tell you, it's trust me, it's financially in their favor to spread spoilers every which way and when. So, you know, again, this is you taking your freedom back from big cinema. And really, it's... You know, do you want to watch a movie and accidentally learn all the spoilers?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to go into it clean and come out clean?
Right. Let's see here. Sue in Glenview says, I got a better idea. Just don't go to the movie.
Well, that's possible too, but that's, you know, tell that to your 7-year-old boy who really wants to see Star Wars, but doesn't want to have it ruined for him by knowing the spoilers.
Right. Let's go to Rob. Rob, yay or nay on spoiler alert?
Hello.
Hello. Yay or nay on spoiler alert? What do you think?
I was going to say nay.
Okay.
Reason being is I'm colorblind. Hmm. Green and red, not going to tell me anything.
That's
not going to tell me one
well,
thing.
Well, again, there's three modes. There's audio only, audio plus.
Okay, audio? Lights. Audio what?
Audio only, audio plus
audio
lights.
Only. Audio plus?
And then audio plus lights plus
audio
vibrate.
What? Audio plus light? Audio plus light vibrate.
Yeah. So every alert will be accompanied with an audio cue.
Can you get the level one with a vibrate?
Yeah, I'm not sure what level.
No, I'm not
yeah,
sure.
I'm not sure what the.
Might be thinking of another product.
Maybe it was a video game, something like Zelda. I'm thinking Zelda. It might have been about Zelda.
I don't play the games. Sorry.
Yeah. So.
I'm too
all right. Let's go to Peter. Peter, what do you think? Yay or nay on spoiler alert?
Well, I think it's, if I understand it rightly, I'm watching a movie and it's going to warn me if a spoiler is occurring within the movie that I'm watching.
Yeah.
It's not a spoiler anymore. It's part of the plot. So
right.
I don't understand. To me, it's kind of a lame idea.
No, Peter, I think you're misunderstanding. Spoilers are the parts of movies that maybe, you know, move the plot in a way, but they call them spoilers because they spoil the movie. So you want to, you know, some people probably want to avoid those parts of the movie.
But how do you know what's happening in the movie if you're avoiding it?
Well, I'm not forcing everyone to use my product. This is for people who want to avoid spoilers.
Right.
So I'm watching a movie. Something's going to occur during the movie, and it's determined that it's a spoiler, so I don't want to see it. I mean, again, I don't see that. It seems like it's part of the plot. Something. It's like watching a detective movie. The detective discovers something.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, but that's what helps you a lot. It's like watching that Bruce Willis movie, The Sixth Sense, that people saw ahead of time.
Right.
That, you know, I don't want to give away the movie, even though it's...
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
See? Exactly.
Spoiler alert.
But you're watching the flick, and you discover Bruce Willis isn't what you think he is.
Wait, all right. Okay.
But what if you want to come out of the movie clean? Without having it been spoiled.
What do you mean clean? You've watched the whole movie. You know what happened.
Well, but not if you don't want to know the spoilers.
Right.
What did you pay to see the movie for?
Yeah, I think we're going in a circle. Thanks, Peter. But I think that Peter does echo a lot of the same sentiment that I'm getting in text that a lot of times you need a spoiler alert for conversations or for people talking about it in different places that when you haven't seen the movie. But when you're in the movie and something happens, then there's no need to worry about an alert for a plot twist because you're watching the movie in front of you. I think that's what Peter's going for. Well, and the several texts that I've got.
Yeah, I just disagree. I think, again, a spoiler is a special kind of thing in a movie that sometimes ruins the movie for you. So, you know, for those who want to avoid that, and again, looking at the internet, I'd call that most moviegoers. This is the perfect...
Well, I mean, maybe there's something to be said because, you know, just not too long ago, I know that I was watching, I think it was kind of like a somewhat scary, maybe it was Stranger Things or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my son turning away and didn't want to see the part. So is that what you're talking about? Like knowing that...
Well, Stranger Things, I think that's a Netflix made for home. Yeah. I'm talking about the kinds of movies, like real movies, like you'd go and see in a movie like Star Wars or
Star Wars films. I know, but I was just saying that maybe the turn away. All right, let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Like I said, this is not a segment about me necessarily doing the interviews. We let the listeners at home workshop it.
Yeah.
Roger, what do you think? Spoiler alert, yay or nay?
I say yay.
Yeah, all right, great. What do you like about it?
Yeah. I like it. I want to know when something's going to be spoiled for me. And like the gentleman called earlier, I think he was trying to talk about Die Hard, not Sixth Sense. Die Hard, especially this time of year, Die Hard, you know, that's the movie you watch.
Yeah.
The spoiler is... Spoiler is, you know, they shoot him, he jumps off.
No, that's spoiler alert.
Spoiler?
Yeah, but that is, that's the whole movie, yeah. We're just not really, feel like everybody is giving their examples, but in a way, ruining stuff, so. All right, 312-981-7200. Well, here's what we'll do. We'll take a break. We'll get an update for Rob's news. We'll get Rob's thought on a spoiler alert as well. And we'll continue. Right now, I would say I'm actually tabulating. I got 4 nays and 3 yays. So it's still up in the air here. I think a lot of people are understanding more than others.
Yeah.
What you're trying to get at here.
I think that one caller was just confused.
And there might have been some confusion. There's always confusion when it comes to Steve Gadlin and the frying pan. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back for the second half. Stay with us.
A 9-3 record. Al Jackson throwing to the end zone.
A 7-game winning streak.
Touchdown.
The Northwestern Wildcats are headed to Nashville. It's Wildcat versus Wildcat as Northwestern takes on Kentucky December 29th in the Music City Bowl. Our pregame starts at 2:30. The kickoff from Nashville at 3:30.
End of the year, Big Ten Bowl football is on. The home of the Northwestern Wildcats, 720 WGN.
All right, let's get an update tonight on tonight's news, sponsored by RZA Acura. You listen to this one, Rob?
I am indeed.
You like spoiler alert? Are you a guy that needs the
I do. You know, a couple of rough edges, maybe, but I like the overall concept. I'm giving it a thumbs up.
All right, there you go. Right away, It feels like, you know, when you have Rob Martyr on your side, that's a big plus because he's a major...
He's a bellwether.
Yeah, he's an endorser, you know, like he's the kind of guy that... you can get in a commercial.
I mean, I'm a newsman, but I can throw my weight behind.
But
some
you could
things.
Be like, I play a newsman on. I am a newsman on radio, but in this case,
right. I bet he's a moviegoer.
Yeah, I hate when the movie's spoiled, especially when I'm watching it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, yeah.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot, frying pan hot.
Thanks, Rob, for the news. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Right now, Steve Gadlin is in studio with me, the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, which won, of course, on Shark Tank. And he got a development deal with Mark Cuban. And before he brings new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download to workshop and poke holes in it and let the audience, Download Nation, get a look at it before anybody else does. That's what we're doing tonight, holiday edition. We have a great one tonight. It's called Spoiler Alert. Tell us what it's all about, Steve.
Yeah, so Spoiler Alert is a device you take with you when you go to the movies, when you just don't want movies ruined for you by those pesky spoilers. So anytime a spoiler is about to happen in the movie, it beeps, an alarm goes off, spoiler alert, right. And gives you the opportunity to, you know, maybe you want to watch it, that's fine, or to cover your eyes, cover your ears, leave the theater, and do whatever you can to avoid that spoiler.
Yeah. And we have a real tight race right now of people who are really for it and people are against it. Let's go right to it and see if we can keep the momentum going. Let's go to Frank. Frank, what do you think? Yay or nay on the spoiler alert?
Well, you know, I kind of like the idea. However, I was wondering one thing. Will it tell me when my milk is spoiled?
Mm. Can it do other things, right?
Well, that's a clever pun, but I think we all know spoiled milk and a movie spoiler are two completely different things. So there are, you know, I'm working on several inventions that do similar things, but no, this specific device is particularly and specifically for movie spoilers.
Okay. Well, that's a great question.
Okay.
That was a great question,
clever
Frank.
Pun.
Thank you for that. Let's keep going. Let's go to Shirley. Shirley, what do you think? What do you like, yay or nay, on spoiler alert?
I love it, but what I'm really wondering is when I'm watching a movie with my husband, what can you do to make him stop asking me what's about to happen next?
Right.
Or question.
Giving it away himself. Like, I have that situation where that can happen. Well, yeah, thank you, Shirley. That's a great question.
Now, if you are watching in a theater and you've got the spoiler alert, at least you'll know when to tune out your husband, too, because before something important happens, spoiler alert, you'll get the blinking lights, the vibration, the loud alarm to give you a heads up. It's not a home device, though.
It won't work at home.
Well, you know... movies are formatted differently when you watch them at home. Sometimes they have commercials in them or they've edited out parts. This is really specifically meant for theatrical release, so it really relies on that timing being precise. Otherwise, you'll get spoiler alert coming up at a part where nothing interesting happens.
Yeah, right, like a Bounty commercial or something like that.
Yeah, and that's just a technical limitation that all technology has.
Okay.
They can't subtitle movies when you watch them at home for the same reason.
Well, I can put on the...
They won't be correct. They'll be improperly subtitled because of the different formatting if you watch the movie at home.
Yeah, I feel like I've... Okay, I just put on the... Okay, yeah, I guess you're... I cannot defense that.
Yep.
All right. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Tanya. Tanya, yay or nay on spoiler alert?
I'm not sure yet. I just have a couple questions.
Okay, great.
Okay. Well, like, can you program it? Like, if there's something like, maybe I don't want to see blood or like a certain actor or something like that. Can I
can
program
you omit
it
them?
So
right.
That's actually like, something that I thought of earlier that I was, it's one of my additions to the invention is that if you can program in an actor's name, so if you don't like Johnny Depp because of some of the recent accusations, again, I don't want to name any names here.
But
if you don't like Johnny Depp, then you can put his name into it. And before Johnny Depp comes on screen, spoiler alert, you get the blinking, the loud alarm, all the various
that could work.
Things. Yeah.
That's awesome. Because I don't want to support anybody that does, you know, stuff.
Again, not to name names or.
No. Right. But I don't want to support those people.
Right. Okay, great. All right. Well,
yay.
All right. Thanks, Tanya. Appreciate that. All right. There you go. Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk, you know, about I think it was in a it was a Kevin Spacey, I forgot who it was, but maybe it was Louis C.K. that they went, that Disney went in and scrubbed him out of a couple of their cartoons.
Lion King, yeah.
It wasn't Lion King. No, I don't Lion think King. He's not in. He wasn't in Lion
King.
It was
Simba.
No, that's Simba. And
Simba.
It was not.
I'm talking about Simba. I'm talking about Simba.
He was Simba. Okay. Well, my point being that instead of doing that, if you had a spoiler alert, you could say, spoiler alert, spoiler alert, Louis C.K. voice, and then you can change the channel.
Yeah. Now, again, I'll say this is a hack for the device. What it's really meant for is to protect you from those vicious spoilers that none of us want to encounter when we're out to see a movie.
All right. Well, 312-981-7200. 630 says, well, count me in the confused category. What the heck are you talking about? Who goes to a movie and doesn't want to know what's going to happen in the movie?
Well, no. This is not about blocking you from what's happening in the movie. This is about protecting you from spoilers. And again, if you look at the internet or the social media, you'll see that people have this visceral reaction to spoilers. They really dislike them. So this keeps you from those spoilers when you're at the theater. You know, you try to avoid those spoilers right up to the last minute. Well, just why not avoid them altogether?
I know people who didn't go on Twitter or Facebook before they saw the most recent Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right.
But then this product would have been perfect for them.
Yeah, and they go to the theater, and then it's spoiled for them. They've spent all that money on a ticket, and suddenly Star Wars is spoiled.
Right. But you know what? Again, I keep stepping on the concept here, which is I want the listeners to really take the lead, because I don't want to be the voice of everybody. So I'll go back. 847, this is Mary again. She says, my mistake for using the term little to describe spoiler alert. I thought you said it was the size of a cell phone. Which, at the beginning, you did say it was the size of the cell phone.
Well, I said it was the size of a cell phone, a little wider and a little thicker. And it's not the device that's so big. It's the power source you need to carry around to keep it running.
And that has to be plugged in a theater?
Well, no. You plug it in at home, and you charge it up for at least 48 hours, and then you take it with you to the theater. But when is going to the movie a last-minute decision?
Why do you need the power source for it if you charge it?
Charge up the power source, and then you plug the power source into the device. It's complicated science. I don't want to. Again, that's not something we're trying to wow investors or potential customers with.
Right.
But it's not unlike things people have seen before.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Eric. Eric, yay or nay on spoiler alert? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I've actually seen this done before.
Oh, okay.
And I assume this idea came from the one they used to do in the as a gimmick in the 50s when they would make these when they would do these horror movies,
Like a smellometer kind of thing, right?
Yeah, if something really gross was going to come up, as a stunt, the screen would go red, white, red, white, red, white, and then it would make a noise going wah, wah, wah.
Like something bad's about to happen. That kind of
The one I remember.
You say they did this in the 50s?
Yeah, he got his.
Fairly certain this technology did not exist in the 1950s.
Well, the concept.
Early, there was color film, so it was early 60s.
Yeah, John Waters type stuff.
No, you're getting closer.
And the one, I remember it because it was a classic. It was the guy who got his.
Compatibility in the 50s and 60s, I don't think would have existed.
He got his hand cut off. And then he could screw on other devices like an axe or a knife or a gun.
Yeah.
And just before anything.
You've been wowed really by movie annoying, magic, though. But that's not reality. No, a device like this is fairly modern. A lot of the technology I've baked into this is stuff that didn't exist even 5-10 minutes ago, much less in the 50s or 60s. So.
Well, I bow to really your superior technology.
Yeah, I appreciate thanks, it. Eric.
I work hard to learn about
science. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you seem to really get defensive about the technology here. 773 says it flashes and has a siren going off. How can this be used in a theater? Again, they're going back to the idea that there's so much that's put into making sure it's a quiet environment around you.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, they ask you to turn off your cell phones. But again, this is definitely not a cell phone. This is, that would be like asking someone who needs, there are people who go to movies with hearing impairment, and they carry speakers with them right next to their chair to broadcast the sound closer to them and louder. Plus, there's so much noise going on in the movie itself, I can't imagine that anyone would be offended by a little extra noise, some sirens, some blinking lights.
Yeah, it's best as it gets depends on the movie,
you're competing with a giant screen and giant Dolby surround. It's, not to use a vulgar term, but that'd be like farting into a tornado.
All right. Well, yeah, I don't. That is vulgar. Let's go to Dominic. Dominic, sure. In North Center. You got yay or nay on spoiler alert, Dominic?
I'm yay.
All right. Why do you like it?
I mean, I think it's a great idea. The one thing I have trouble with is the name of it. I think, like the earlier caller, like 50s and 60s, I think spoiler alert is like, you know, so 2017, you know? I think we got to find a new name for that word.
For something that might be 2019, 2020. Such as.
Yeah, you got to shoot for the moon, you'll land on the stars.
No, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. You know, I think spoiler alert, while it may be a 2017 term, once you get into 2018, 2019, we'll have a level of nostalgia attached to it as well. So I'm not too worried about that.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Dominic. All right. 312-981-7200. We'll take our break here. We'll come back, and we will tally up the yays and nays for spoiler alert and also get into, of course, the grand tradition of the more colorful texts that have been sent Steve's way tonight. 312-981-7200. It's the Frying Pan. Stay with us. All right, it's a download here, 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, of course, the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com and, of course, his development deal with Mark Cuban. Steve Gadlin, the innovator and inventor, who tonight brought us, spoiler alert, a new invention. If you want to give the last of elevator pitching segment, go for
it. It's just a device you bring with you into the movie theater that audibly and visibly warns you when a spoiler is about to happen, mm-hmm. so you can walk out of that theater as clean as when you walked in.
563 wants to know, does it come in like a fanny pack?
Similar, yeah, it does. Again, the size of the main device will fit in most theater apparel pockets, but we do have a pouch you can strap along, kind of a spy belt. And then a backpack for the power source.
219 says, I'd say nay on the loud alarms and buzzers, but would say yay if you had a very painful electric shock for those who didn't want to see the spoiler.
I will say we did user test that, and we had some negative allergic reactions.
I'll bet.
I guess some people are allergic to electricity.
262 says, this is a great idea. I love it. Now when I leave the movie theater and people ask me what happened at the end of the movie, I won't have a damn clue. Brilliant. Steve, you're in line for the next Real Men of Genius commercial.
Oh, thank you.
312 wants to know, is it Bluetooth compatible?
Yeah, again, it's Bluetooth compatible. That's how it syncs up information about the film you're watching.
Right.
So it knows when to, spoiler alert, and when to interrupt you.
Right. 847 says, spoiler alert is meant to take our freedom back, as you said.
Yes.
And so now it seems this little device seems a little bigger than all of us.
Ah, that's a good point, and I appreciate that.
773 says, I think Steve is confused by spoilers and Easter eggs.
No, Easter eggs are funny little jokes that are planted in film. Spoilers are these important parts of movies that kind of ruin movies for people sometimes. They're plot points that move things forward or backward or in sideways or plot twists. And if you watch the internet like I do, you'll see a lot of people have a strong aversion to them.
224 says, totally stupid.
Ah, okay.
608 says, like Zaphod's peril-sensitive sunglasses. Does that ring anything to you?
I think he's referring to a character from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but I do not remember the peril-sensitive sunglasses, so I can't comment.
Tom wants to know, 708, have any of these ideas pitched on WGN ever been approved by Mark Cuban?
Well, again, it's not the job of the investor to approve or disapprove a project. It's the job of the investor to fund a project by creating cash flow.
Okay.
And as to whether or not that's happened, I cannot comment.
Okay. 219 says, what? Just a question mark. Love the product idea, 608 says. I'm biased, though, because a couple of years ago I bought this product introduced on the show, a clear screen that fits over my windshield, controllers that attach to my steering wheel,
so that
I can play video games while I drive. Yes. Life changer, Carrie from Sycamore.
Yeah, that's great. That was a... That's been a successful product for us, the cartridge attachment. Yeah.
779 says Cuban is changing his phone number right now.
That's great. You know, had he ever shared it with me, then yeah, sure.
412 says, why not make cat shoes instead of cat drawings for shoes? That's a great business deal. Take that to Mark Cuban.
What is it? Cat?
Cat shoes. Like four shoes for cats.
I'm going to put that one in my back pocket.
779 says, you called us brilliant?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Well, hey, if that's what you say is how I respond to that. Similar to how I think Jesus responded to Pontius Pilate when he asked if he was king.
Well, he just said...
if that's what they call me, that's what... If you call me brilliant, then if the shoe fits, I'll wear it, is what I say.
Peter from Decatur says, I'm a nay. We have a local theater that has two strikes policy. The first time you're caught with an electronic device, you'll be asked to silence or turn it off. The second time, you'll be asked to leave with no refund. The reasoning is electronic devices are disrupting nearby moviegoers.
Well, so are spoilers.
Well, then 312 asked a question, and this is really the question at the heart, and it is echoed by 15 or 20 texters and five callers tonight.
Yeah.
312, how can your film experience be spoiled if you are there to watch it?
Well, and I hesitate to explain this for the fifth or sixth time, Justin, because I don't want to say that your callers are fools. You know, I like to put a little faith in the listener. I believe that Chicago is a city of big shoulders and big intelligence. That's something I say often. I'll say, you know, a movie can be ruined for you while you're watching it because it's filled with little mines, like landmines called spoilers. You know, little parts of the movie
How did they ruin it?
By revealing too much.
But how do you reveal too much if you're in the theater to watch too much? Meaning that's why you're there. I can understand this product being on the street, Facebook, like it's in your pocket while you're walking on the street and someone is talking about you, like, spoiler alert, or in your office. But when you're actually sitting down and you bought the ticket and you're watching the movie, it's no longer a spoiler. It's a movie.
Well, I think people have the same desire not to have a movie ruined for them, both before, during, and after they've seen the movie.
Right.
That's the basic premise of spoiler alert. It's that you want to walk out of a film as clean as you were mentally as when you walked into the film.
Are film companies on board with this?
Well, that's a tricky question. The film companies don't control much of the viewing experience. It's primarily the theaters. And I'll tell you, the theaters have given us a resounding thumbs up. We've talked.
Really? They have?
Oh, resounding. We've talked to several theater chains, and the response has been resounding. And what that tells me is that they understand something that some of your callers don't, which is that innate desire to avoid spoilers.
No, I get it. And I speak for Download Nation, and I know that, you know, you have quite the disdain, a resounding disdain. But I understand. I think the concept being that once you're in the space and you're watching the piece of art, the film that you were trying to avoid spoilers to be ruined outside, it no longer is a spoiler. It's just a movie.
You think it's time for spoilers when you're in the theater?
No, I think if done in a way that it's not spoiled, it's the piece of art that you paid money to watch.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. If there was a bowl full of 1,000 delicious Skittles and one poison Skittle, would you reach your hand in and have a handful? And you're hungry. I'll say, in this scenario, you're hungry for Skittles.
I do like Skittles.
Yeah. So, again...
Yeah, well, I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's been
thinking about it. Well, I got to say, you know, it's great to have you back, buddy. And I have to say that a lot of yays tonight.
Yeah.
I thought for sure after the first, and I know Joe echoes this as well, that when we first heard the pitch, we're like, this is going to be a resounding no. There's going to be a thud, and there's going to be a lot of people. But I was surprised at how many people came through to say they would enjoy a product like this. So maybe you have your finger on the pulse of moviegoer experience.
Well, my finger's always been on the pulse. It's on a lot of pulses, and that's why I succeed at what I do. So, no, I appreciate the chance to tease and delight your listeners with a little taste of what's coming up in 2018.
Yes, that's right.
Steve Gadlin.
Steve Gadlin, of course, he joins us every, I was going to say, I'm so used to saying every month, every day,
every
week.
Justin.
It should be. Steve Gadlin joins us whenever he is inspired. How about we say that?
Yeah.
With a new idea. This one was spoiler alert. We'll put up some of the specs online, WGNradio.com, and get an idea, give you a better idea. You can listen to this again and get all the details. Steve, happy holidays, buddy. And this holiday tradition just keeps getting stronger and stronger, the holiday frying pan. And, of course, happy new year. And I'm so looking forward to 2018.
Yeah, same here. Happy holidays to you, Justin.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. All right, coming up in for Patty Vasquez tonight, a holiday treat.
Oh, yes.
Good to see you, John.
More holiday trick. We don't quite know exactly.
And
what's
Mike Heidemann is in.
Yeah, what's
Look
going
at
on,
this,
Justin?
Guys?
Yeah, Mike's doing a power play. I'm going to tell everyone, by the way.
You were not happy about this, John.
I'm happy about it. Michael, I always call him Michael instead of Mike. He's like, I'm going to run the board tonight, John.
Oh.
And I was like, all right. I mean, he's a professional. He's been doing this for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Just normally we have a routine set up, and I don't know how I feel about this. I think he's going to do great, though. But if your calls get dropped, we know who to blame.
Yeah.
It's not me this time. Usually it's me.
You should have heard what Heidemann was saying up here about you earlier.
What'd he say?
Yeah.
What'd he say?
You know what? Let's save it for air.
It was so awkward.
No, we got a really good show.
What did he got tonight?
We're going to talk to the folks behind the SNL exhibit. Have you seen the SNL?
I have not. I'm going the day after Christmas.
It's really, really cool. And they're throwing an event next week called the Shweddy Ball.
I saw that.
So we're going to chat about that and probably giggle a bunch. Who else we got?
It's so
board
great.
Operator
so great.
Mike Heidemann.
I have to say, like, going over there and seeing all the Instagram stuff and everything about that place, it's really great. It seems to be everything that was expected.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know. I went there to cover it for the show I work on the U, and I didn't know what to expect. You know, you go to museums and exhibits, you just never know, and you think, ugh. It really blew me away. It was really cool how just seeing all the actual costumes, some of the old sets.
Yeah, right?
They kind of walk you through, and we'll talk about this during the show.
Yeah.
Like Monday through, you kind of walk through the show in the series of behind the scenes of like, what's the cast doing on Monday? What
That's
are the writers
so
doing? It's really cool.
That's cool.
They really did a good job over there.
And it's a lot more interactive, too, than what you see usually at the Broadcast Museum. Because I think for a few years, it was mainly just the Family Ties exhibit. And then now, it's really awesome, and we're excited to talk to them.
Right.
Speaking of movies and just TV and entertainment in general, we have Don Ogier Gibb. Do you know who that is, Justin?
I don't. Who is that?
Have you seen Revenge of the Nerds?
Of course. Ogier. Duh.
Yes.
Yeah. Ogier. I should have given away when he said his character name. I thought it was like his middle, like he just got married or something. Yeah.
His maiden name.
Ogier himself is going to be joining us. He's going to be hosting a New Year's Eve celebration over at Trader Todd's.
You know
this
what?
Year.
That's amazing you said that, because the first thing that popped in my head was Trader Todd's.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in the day, I would say probably 10 years ago, and I remember this with doing comedy stuff, that everyone knew that Ogier hung out at Trader Todd's.
Wait, really?
He hung out there. I don't know if he owned it or he was.
Oh, interesting.
I think he was dating somebody involved. I forgot what the story was. And we had put a couple calls in Schadenfreude, my comedy group, to get Ogier to be in bits. And I remember they declined on the thing. But the point being that like he was, it was already known that he was in Chicago, kind of under the radar that Ogier was hanging out at Belmont and Sheffield.
I got a question. I got a professional question for you, Justin.
Professional.
So I've never seen any of the Revenge of the Nerds movies. Nothing. Would have never idea who this person was. So should I admit that to him, or should I be like, oh yeah, we all love the movies, it's great? What should I do?
I don't know. I think you just say you didn't see him.
Yeah. Everyone gasps when I say that I haven't seen him. That must be something, right? I got to be honest with the guy, right?
I just remember embarrassing my grandmother because we watched that movie when she was babysitting one time, and there's a lot of stuff in that movie.
It was coming from the 1980s comedy, like just peg leg of just always having, you know, like things like nudity and just swears, and that's how they sold comedy at the time. And
you're
also,
absolutely right.
Do you remember when Comedy Central only had the rights to just a few couple movies, and they would play Revenge of the Nerds on basically repeat for weeks on end?
That and Kids in the Hall just kind of played. Yeah. Over and over and over.
Well, Heidemann's going to run that segment and all of it.
I like it.
He's running the board.
He's been here for a while. That's a great book. Good job.
So we got a lot of fun stuff coming up. Have a great night.
You guys, I'm out. I will see you right after New Year's. I'm back. I think Pete and I are both back in the right. There's a Hawks game, I think, on the Wednesday, so we're back on the 4th.
Yeah.
Thursday the 4th.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, because I'm in for you a couple days next week.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Have a great show.
Absolutely.
Happy holidays, guys, and happy New Year to everybody listening to WGN Radio, and take it away.
Absolutely. Okay.